I'm Frank Vaughn. It is January 25th, 2025, and I want to take you on a journey back in time. The year is 1988. Brian Mulroney is facing an election. After the 1984 landslide victory, he is telling the Canadian public that we need a new tax called the Goods and Services Tax. Now, for those of you my age or younger, you may not remember a time that the GST did not exist. There was this other thing called the Manufacturer's Sales Tax that existed, and the GST was proposed as a replacement. But the GST would be applied to many more items, but I digress. At the time, the Liberals and the NDP and everybody else in the House, for that matter, campaigned hard against it and said they would never support such a tax, period. They raised money. They went into the election. And even though Mulroney got a reduced majority, he still formed the next majority government. 1991 rolls around. The GST is introduced and passed. This man, John Nunziata, a Liberal who had no reason to vote for it and had in fact promised his constituents, right hand to God, that he wouldn't vote in favor of it. And then he did. He voted for it. So a man by the name of Phil Ahrens, at his own expense, sued John Nunziata and brought him to court and said that what Nunziata had done constituted a breach of contract and that campaign funds were illegally collected based on a lie. So it weeded its way through the court, and in 1992, Nunziata won the lawsuit, and the judge, Justice John O'Driscoll, ruled that while Nunziata's actions might have been disappointing and even dishonest in the eyes of voters, there was no legal obligation for an MP to vote according to campaign promises once elected. The court determined that there was no enforceable contract between Nunziata and his voters regarding his vote on the GST, and thus he could not be forced to resign or repay campaign contributions. So when I talk in previous videos about the fact that you have no recourse when it comes to politicians, you have no legal recourse, you have no constitutional recourse, you elect these people, a class of people by design that draws sociopaths and psychopaths, professional liars, flock to politics. You as a citizen have no rights. You cannot advance policy. You cannot recall them. You get to mark an X on a ballot. You can't sue them. You have no legal recourse. It's already part of the law because of this man, another Liberal legacy. Now, in the United States, by my count, and admittedly, maybe it's inaccurate by one or two people, but by my count, 62 members of Congress and the Senate, so both elected chambers, have gone to jail for violation of the law since the founding of the country. In Canada, only four have gone to jail, and only one of them went to jail because they violated the nation. It was 1947. I can't remember the man's name, but he committed crimes under the Espionage Act and was sent to prison for, I believe it was 6 years. Your politicians have been selling Canada out to China, to Saudi Arabia, to the Americans, to whoever you want, to India. They've turned Canada into a clearinghouse, a resource colony. They have violated her fundamental right to independence. They have opposed every single idea that would have made her secure. They have diseased her resilience and done everything in their power to make sure that Canada is weak. And there is nothing you as a citizen can do about it. It strains the bounds of credibility or even high fantasy that Chrystia Freeland could go on X and she could say, President Trump, Canada is not for sale. We are strong, independent, and will never let your health insurers profit off Canadians. This is in response to Trump saying that we would have better health care if we joined the United States. I think it's a wash 50,000 people in this country leave this country every single year and seek care in the United States because they can't get it here. Canada is a nation of MAID, which is medical assistance in dying. That's what we do now. We offer people that as healthcare options when they have to sit on a waiting list for years at a time to get the healthcare that everybody seems to think is so wonderful in this country. 50,000 after they've paid taxes already towards our so-called free system. I just love it when Bernie Sanders gets on his social media and talks about free Canadian healthcare. It's not free. It's one of our most expensive line items. People, 30,000 a year, die on waiting lists. That is Canadian healthcare. And far more than that, as I just said, with their after-tax income, so they've already paid for our failing system, they go to the United States and seek care. I know some of them. People say, oh, they must be rich and it must be nice to have money. I know people who aren't rich. I know people who went into heavy debt to go and save their life because they couldn't save their life here. So let's call it a wash. Canada is not willing to embrace what other countries doing universal health care better do, and that is a private component. We share in common with North Korea a total resistance to private components in our healthcare. But every other country that provides universal medicine to their people, they do it. In fact, Tommy Douglas himself, the vaunted hero of Canadian healthcare, recommended a private component. We didn't listen. That's why our healthcare system is broken. We didn't listen to everything that Tommy Douglas said. We only listened to pieces. Now, I must admit that this is artificially generated. I very rarely will ever use AI on this channel. In fact, maybe this is the last time because I want to make sure that nothing I use is AI. This is going to be humans only. Even the art that I used was created by a human. It's not created by AI. So make sure you understand that. I paid for the rights to these pictures. Canada is owned by China. I've already covered how our universities are heavily funded by China, how our culture, not just Canada's, but the United States, has come to be dominated by what China wants it to be dominated by, the fentanyl problem that we have. It is aided and abetted by our governments. They want it here. If they didn't want it here, it wouldn't be here. But a lot of those raw components are coming from China. We have heavy Chinese involvement. CCP Chinese involvement in our mineral industries, in our oil industries, and we have the only alternative we have to dependence on the United States is to potentially take our products to the Chinese market or to overseas to other despots that we could deal with. But we have resisted doing even that. Now let's have a listen to the so-called Conservative Premier of Nova Scotia, part of Team Canada, as they try to address the crisis of today, which is tariffs and Ottawa's impending trade war, something that this premier seems to support. He put his name on a letter in response to the United States, and instead of getting tough on our border and tough on human smuggling and tough on drug trafficking, we intend to go dollar for dollar to war and maybe cut off energy supplies to the United States. As if that can get us anywhere. Let's listen to what his solution would be to create Canadian resilience.
You know, I called for the Prime Minister and asked the federal government to immediately approve the Energy East project. That's something that they could do, and I encourage them to do. There was support from a number of premiers on that as well.
You know, I've spoke about Energy East before and said that if we wanted to create resilience for this country, if we wanted to be stronger and more independent, Energy East would be a component that we would pursue. But I also showed you a list of dozens of projects that we've canceled that would have helped Canada become a stronger, more resilient nation. These are solutions that should have been implemented a decade ago. But we're here now. So all this talk of approving Energy East, it's wind, it's hot air, it can't do anything for us today, it can only do something for us years from now when it's built. Now, in the process of getting ready for this segment of the video, I was doing some research. But in the process, I found out that a certain individual named Marty Up North, who has an X account that you should consider following, had already done the job for me. So thank you, Marty. I'm going to read your list now. This is what it would take to get Energy East off the ground. 72 pumping stations, each with 4,000 or 5,000 horsepower motors. And many of those stations would have no power nearby, so you'd have to build the generating capacity. 10,000 landowners to deal with. So you have to expropriate their property. You have to go through a process. Boring the St. Lawrence Seaway, so you have to go underneath it or through it. Otherwise, you have to overcome that obstacle. Where to build the storage in New Brunswick, the size of the storage, how to control it, leak detection. Even at 0.5% sensitivity means that a 5,000-barrel leak is undetectable. How to build it. Quebec, I could just stop there. Quebec likes to have a stranglehold on this federation. They don't want to strengthen Canada because a weak Canada serves their interests, and we're going to get into that a little bit more in this video. But Quebec will oppose and always will oppose anything that empowers the people, empowers the other provinces, or empowers the Federation, because strengthening any of those things weakens Quebec, and all Quebec cares about is itself, period. And if you don't like it, go away. Quebec is the reason this country sucks. That's a fact. We probably would have been better off if they had a left in 1995, but I digress. Acid soils in the Maritimes that would rot your pipe if you don't have a solution, regulatory approval, thousands of line crossings, the beluga whale problem, Quebec's request, Quebec, dealing with the Irvings, and so on. All this is to say, how many years do you think it's going to take to overcome this? And in the meantime, because we didn't start on these solutions, like, it makes me sick to my stomach, truly and genuinely sick to my stomach. This posture, I mean, it infuriates me, in addition to making me sick. This posturing by so-called Team Canada. These are the people who have kept Canada weak. These are the people who haven't done the brave things that could actually have strengthened this country. These are the people who've sold Canada out. And they want a posture now. They want a posture. Energy East is not a solution today. Energy East is a solution in 2035. This from the post-millennial. Canada warns of retaliation in response to Trump's proposed tariffs. We're going to get into this a little bit. But first, as I scroll through post-millennial, is it possible to find a thumbnail that doesn't have Justin Trudeau's picture? This is the state of Canada's alternative media fawning Justin Trudeau coverage. I mean, at least the CBC has the courtesy every now and again to remove his face from their front page. But I digress. Trudeau has promised that any company that loses money in his impending trade war with the United States will be compensated by the federal government. So if he cuts off energy shipments to the United States, cuts off trade to the United States, anything that he does, he will backstop with money from the taxpayer. Now remember, Canada is running record deficits already. He's going to just print more money and give it to business. I don't think people understand how bad the management is up here and how it actually looks like a concerted plan to completely bring down the country. And the fact of the matter is that this guy who is going to be leading the Liberal Party, I mean, it's going to happen.
I've had many jobs. I've had many jobs where I came in at the top. I came in at the top of the Bank of England, Bank of Canada, in terms of the United Nations.
This guy is about as core an insider as you're ever going to get. His name is on your money. They're trying to bill him as an outsider, as a savior of the Liberal Party, as somebody that, as if he wasn't behind every single policy decision that's so weak in this nation. You're going to have downward pressure on the value of the dollar because we can't get our products to market by design. The people now talking about Energy East opposed it by design. They did everything they could to destroy our resilience by design. So our dollar has downward pressure there. The government is spending massively in excess of its revenues. and interest rates are higher than they used to be, so you have massive downward pressure on the value of your dollars there. When Justin Trudeau talks about printing money out of thin air to compensate anybody that loses money in the trade war, you have downward pressure on the value of your dollar, which means prices increase. It's not that prices go up, folks. They do, for various reasons. Prices fluctuate. But when you see prices going up at the store, it's actually the value of your money going down. That's how it works. Inflation. How is inflation created? Government. Government creates inflation. Loose money printing policies create inflation. But there's another factor here. Trump is about to do a big tax cut. Trump is turning the United States into one of the most pro-business jurisdictions on the planet, bar none. Capital is going to pour back into the United States, and a lot of that capital is going to come from Canada and businesses leaving to go there. It's already starting. So on top of all those other things I just highlighted, we're going to have this great big suction sound coming from the United States as all of our businesses leave. And so what are we doing? What is Canada doing up here? Amazon layoffs prompt Canada to review government deals. So Amazon didn't like dealing with Quebec unions. He didn't like the idea. They didn't like the idea of unionization in Quebec. They didn't like the idea of dealing with Quebec labor laws. So they said, okay, we're done. We're going to leave. Because in a world of, and we're going to let, by the way, they're going to let small contractors do the job there. So it's not a total loss. It's just going to avoid a lot of problems for Amazon. Their products are still going to be delivered. So Canada, in all its infinite wisdom, is thinking about suing them or arbitrarily dictating, there's calls for this, arbitrarily dictating that they can't leave. You have to stay. You have to stay. You have to do business in Canada. You're not allowed to leave. Can you think of a more abusive relationship than somebody trying to walk away and the abusive partner saying, no, you can't leave? And I was in a Spaces the other day with some prominent conservative accounts, and I was listening. And everybody was talking, not everybody, but a lot of the people in there, the conversation centered around Ottawa getting involved and putting a stop to this. The government, which has done such a great job of managing Canada up to this point, to get involved and save these jobs and tell Amazon what to do. Does anybody recall when we told the social media companies what they were going to do, that all of a sudden we just didn't have Canadian news content anymore? I mean, that's what happens. Whenever Ottawa gets involved, things break. So do you think it's going to have a favorable outcome if Ottawa decides to start dictating what businesses can come and go into Canada? First off, nobody's going to want to come here because they know that they'll be under that legal burden. And secondly, it's just going to encourage more and more people to leave. We're in big trouble. Folks, in the western provinces, honestly and truly, we should be beginning a conversation either about separation or joining the United States. We should seriously consider this conversation because if they truly care about Canada in Ottawa, if Quebec truly cares about Canada, they would view that as a legitimate threat, and they might actually do something about it. Maybe they would actually grant some kind of fairness to the western provinces. I think we're past that point. We have to start having this conversation because the Federation is corrupt and broken as it is, and these guys are leading us all into suffering. That's all we're going to get out of it. Now, Polyev, everybody thinks we're going to elect Polyev, and he's going to save the day. And I've talked about in previous videos how he's going to be up against the wall because institutionally all the institutions in Canada are opposed to him. Public sector unions, the Senate, the judiciary, everything is going to oppose any sort of aggressive conservative agenda that changes the channel in this country. The headline here is Polyev says he wouldn't make any big changes to the equalization program. At least he's being honest. I'll give him credit for that. Nobody can fix equalization. Nobody. They can talk about it all they want, But we have to be allowed by Quebec and Ontario to want to fix these problems. They don't want to fix these problems. They want the rest of the provinces, the rest of the Federation, to be bent over a barrel forever. So I give Polyev credit. People say his agenda is not radical enough, or it doesn't go far enough, or it's not going to create the change that's required. And you're right, it's not, because he knows what he's up against. He's delivering a message consistent with what he thinks he can deliver on. People say to me all the time, you know, you have no guarantees that he'll keep his word, so why would you support him? He has every incentive to keep his word. It's the only way he's going to be able to keep his job. It's the only way a conservative government's going to be able to maintain itself. In the face of all this opposition, is if they do what they say they're going to do, or they at least try to say what they're going to do, and what they say they're going to do doesn't go far enough, because they have to be realistic about what they can do. I'm going to vote for the Conservative Party. There's no other vote to be had. I've already explained why the PPC is just a fundraising junket. It's a false song, and Bernier is going to leave you high and dry very soon. Believe you me, one election away from him dumping everything and being gone from Canada forever. He'll live in Florida and live out the rest of his days. The man doesn't care about Canada. He doesn't care about you. He was a sovereignist, for heaven's sake. He's a Quebecois. They only care about one thing, themselves, and making sure that Canada is weak for their interests. That's what they care about. But I digress. I'm going to vote for Polyev. But I don't have a whole lot of hope. I think my life might get better. But the big changes that can save this country and actually make us resilient are not going to happen under a conservative government. It's time for the provinces to start talking about something different, and specifically the western provinces. It's time to start talking about a breakup. And I honestly don't think the Americans are going to just let us leave now. In the multipolar world that we're coming into, this competition between the United States and China, and to a lesser extent Russia and Europe, is going to dominate the next decades. There's this huge sea change happening in the unipolar moment, where the United States as the sole hegemon is gone. Now the Americans are signaling their enemy is not so much China and Russia as it is the enemy within, the people who are weakening and destroying the West. The Americans have signaled that their intention is to stop that weakening and make, at the very least, North America secure. We should be taking it very seriously. The Western provinces of this country should be having that conversation out in the open, that maybe there's a better deal to be had somewhere else. Because if we go on for too long, I've talked about the benefits, and there's some drawbacks too. I've talked about the benefits, I've talked about the drawbacks of statehood. But if we go too far into the trade war, if we go too far down this timeline, we may lose what negotiating power we have now. The last thing anybody wants to end up is a territory of the United States with no actual rights. No Senate seats, no real congressional seats. You don't want that. And we certainly don't want the status quo of Canada. I told you, whether you like it or not, you can love the land. You can love the people. Your elected officials' first duty is to the benefit of the people that elected them. Looking at Daniel Smith, looking at Scott Moe, you owe your people the best deal that you can possibly negotiate. We don't have that deal with Canada. And considering the money printing, considering the inflation, considering what's happening in the United States in terms of business climate, do you hear the suction sound? It's right there. So it's time to start thinking about your people and thinking about the future long and hard. Canada's never been good to us out here. That's one of the reasons I'm here. I like an underdog, and we are the underdogs. Excuse me. But if we want to actually apply pressure to Ottawa, we're not going to do that by cooperating with Ottawa. We're going to do that by courting the United States. If Ottawa really wants to keep the country together, they better start changing things. And soon. And they're not going to change things if we keep encouraging them to maintain the status quo. Polyev ain't going to change anything. This is status quo stuff. You want something different, you're going to have to fight for it. And the way you fight for it is by applying political pressure on Ottawa. There's an opportunity right now. The United States is opening that door. we should be standing there knocking, at the very least, to see what we can do. One way or another, Canada as it is over. We can extend the pain another 5, 10, 15 years, but so long as nobody is actually calling for the reforms and renegotiating the Federation, all there is long-term decline left for everybody. Your taxes are already sky high. The services that they pay for, which for some reason many Canadians are married to, like healthcare and education, are in decline. Education has become a haven for far-left ideologues and, quite frankly, child abusers. And the unions that represent them are far more powerful than your elected government. Public sector unions, private sector unions, more powerful. The bureaucracy, more powerful than the people you elect, which you have no control over anyway. Your standard of living is in decline. Your streets are full of meth heads and fent zombies. And the government, rather than wanting to do anything about it, wants to tank the Canadian economy in a trade war we can't win instead of doing something about it. I'm sorry, folks. That's the truth. When are we going to start thinking about negotiating a better deal with somebody? Either ourselves or with the Americans. But like I said, I don't think the Americans just let us walk away. I think the time for separation was probably 15 years ago. And then you've got that coming up too. And I'll finish on this point. The Bloc Québécois is going to form a huge portion of our national parliament and maybe the official opposition by the time we get an election, and God knows when that's going to be. The Parti Québécois, when the provincial election comes along, is going to form a supermajority government in Quebec. How long until we get another referendum? Do you understand what the referendums were? Leverage. Applying pressure on Ottawa. Quebec, as I've said, I've been very negative on Quebec in this video as regards Canada, because I should be. But on the flip side, as I've often said, they're the only province that uses the Federation the way it's designed to be used. They take full advantage of it, of everything. The other provinces are afraid to exercise their rights, afraid to use the notwithstanding clause, for example, but Quebec uses it with abandon. And no one says anything about it because this whole Federation is designed to cater to Quebec. They're going to do it to us again. When is enough enough? When do we redesign the Federation? When do we pull the plug on the Federation? We are existing in a moment of opportunity where a conversation with the United States by provincial leaders might make sense for the benefit of people, the people who are being disadvantaged. Citizens of Canada, you're in an abusive relationship. You have no power over your government. They don't have to keep their promises to you. They don't even have to make promises to you. They don't have to give you a voice. They don't face criminal liability when they break the law. They give you nothing. You can't advance policy. You can't advance bills. You can't do anything except mark an X on a piece of paper and hope that something happens. You can't pull down your judges. You can't do anything about the public sector unions. You can't do anything except pay half your income in taxes. Wake up. You're being abused. When do you leave the relationship? Did you know that I have a website, frankvaughn.ca, the ultimate repository for all of my work, and a backup location just in case the censors come for me again? And if you like the content, please consider using the donate link in one of the options available. There are no paywalls, there is no advertising, and there is no Patreon, and I intend to keep it that way. Thank you for your time and your consideration.